This is Day to Day. I'm Joe Palka. Today in Iraq, at least 28 people, including several Iraqi police officers, are dead after a massive explosion. Police were reportedly raiding a house in Baghdad when insurgents blew it up. Violent attacks like the one today in Baghdad are now happening in parts of the country that were considered relatively safe until recently. With the Iraqi election scheduled for January, the violence could keep a large number of voters away from the polls. NPR's Mike Schuster spent much of the past month reporting from Iraq. He spoke earlier with Day to Day's Madeline Brand about the viability of the Iraqi elections.
Mike, the election is set for the end of January, and as of what you saw recently, you returned last Thursday, how valid do you think it'll be given the security situation?
Well, that depends on what you mean by valid. The election will probably be carried off in large parts of Iraq successfully. There are large parts of Iraq, mostly inhabited by the Shiite Arabs of Iraq, in the south, like in cities such as Karbala and Najaf, and parts of Baghdad, Sadr City, a very large slum with a couple of million people, most of whom are Shiites, and other parts of Iraq. It'll probably be fairly successful. It's likely that there could be violence in those areas, but it will be relatively minimal. And my guess is that millions of Iraqis who live in those places will eagerly come out to vote, and they will vote for Shiite candidates. They're likely to be the majority, and they're likely to make up the next government of Iraq. There are also important areas of the country, mostly where Sunnis live, where it's really difficult to predict how successful the election will be, but the likelihood is that there'll be plenty of violence, that voters will be intimidated and feel vulnerable and won't go in as large numbers, and that, in effect, those parts of Iraq will be left unrepresented by the election. Then the question will be, how valid is that? How legitimate is the government that comes after? And will the insurgency then continue afterwards? And those are questions we don't know.
Well, is the United States position that, okay, so parts of the country won't be represented in this voting, at least most of the country will be represented in this voting, and oh well, tough luck, this is the way it is?
No, not tough luck and not oh well, but yes, most of the country will be represented. A process creating a representative government will have taken another step. The United States will continue to fight the insurgency and, according to political and military leaders, hurt the insurgency over time. And I think that the Bush administration and U.S. officials there believe that over time this insurgency can be defeated. That's, of course, a debatable proposition. But I don't think it's oh well. I think it's that at least those who are in charge of U.S. policy believe that one step at a time, one day at a time, this is a policy that's going to work. Of course, that's a big question.
Now, this insurgency caught many people by surprise and has, in conversations that we've had previously, seemed to have brought large portions of the U.S. military to its knees in certain respects. Describe for us what it's like to actually be there and to try to travel around the country.
Unlike other conflicts that I've covered, you can't simply get up in the morning and you learn that you're in Baghdad and you learn that a car bomb has gone off in Karbala, which is not very far south of Baghdad. You can't travel on the road. It's too dangerous. You have to stay and you have to have your Iraqi employees, interpreters, and reporters call and try to gather information in that fashion. The only way that you can really travel outside of Baghdad now is on U.S. military helicopter. They don't fly these helicopters during the day because they could be vulnerable to ground fire. You fly very low and very fast so that the insurgents who may control the ground can't get a bead on the chopper. And it's frustrating because as a reporter doing daily journalism, which is what we do at NPR, you're called upon to report authoritatively facts. It's very frustrating because you could report authoritatively sounding on facts on one day, and a week later you can find out that those facts that you reported a week before were just wrong. They were in wire copy, they were in newspapers, they were on television, and then they were on NPR, and they can turn out to be wrong.
Mike, until fairly recently, there were some major cities that were calm, that were car bomb free, if you will. And I understand that's no longer the case.
Yeah, that's the sad thing. Particularly the important Shiite cities of the south, Najaf and Karbala in particular, and some of the smaller ones. When you think back, until recently, there was hardly a report of violence in Najaf or Karbala since last spring. Unfortunately, in the last couple of weeks, that changed with these car bombs at bus stations and at some of the important Shiite religious shrines in both cities. And it looks like it's an attempt by the Sunni insurgents to stimulate sectarian strife to make it even more difficult to hold this election, especially in the cities where it looked like the election could have been held well and peacefully. And that's a real danger, because that kind of strife, if the Shiites, who have militia of their own, if they decide to fight back, that could generalize the conflict throughout Iraq and lead to civil war and possible foreign intervention on a scale that we haven't seen yet in Iraq, would make things far more worse than even the dire situation that exists in Iraq now.
And Mike, is there any good news on the reconstruction effort?
It's hard to see. The U.S. military and the civilian authorities in Baghdad are always telling reporters that there's a lot of reconstruction going on, that they're spending millions of dollars and that they're making some progress. But at the same time, you can't get to a lot of these projects because of the security situation. And I had some conversations with some middle-level officers of the army who are actually spending money. I was with one unit that had $1 million in their safe and that they were able to spend money at the rate of $50,000-$80,000 on projects. But then I'm also being told by U.S. officers that the insurgents are coming in at night and blowing things up. This happens fairly regularly. So it's very, very difficult to get a sense of the progress on reconstruction, because it always seems that security is the primary issue, that without security, money can be spent, things can be rebuilt, and sabotage and explosions can happen and in one moment destroy the work that's been going on for months.
And even aside from that, if that doesn't happen, how do you verify that this money is being spent in a way that it should be?
Well, you could, if reporters could, if we had a chance to move around and really talk to people, talk to the neighborhood councils, watch the work being done between the neighborhood councils and supported by the U.S. military or the U.S. embassy. But we're not free to, because the situation is so dangerous.
What you're describing sounds a lot like anarchy.
I think that I would certainly describe the situation in Iraq as chaos and lawlessness. I think it's fair to talk about Iraq as a failed state. There's no question about that. Anarchy means the lack of government. There's an attempt to be creating a national government, the Iraqi interim government, but it's weak because of the security situation. It is a lawless, chaotic, failed state at this point, and the United States is trying to move it out of that situation, and we just don't know whether that's going to be successful yet.
NPR's Mike Schuster just returned from Iraq. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Madeline.
That interview by Day-to-Day's Madeline Brand.